Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
On Kaya Biz, I am Tipiso Makwetla, standing in for Guguletu Mfupi, who is out today. So we had a look at the markets earlier on market performance. We mentioned the JSE seeing a third consecutive positive month. That's despite post-election wobbles and the talk behind closed doors. Much of it has been speculated on, particularly by, we've seen credit ratings agencies, several of them making their thoughts known on the kind of government that will put South Africa on a better economic path, or, you know, at least improve the prospects of South Africa's future. But what does this mean, and how much influence do these credit ratings agency have? So they have an impact on issuers as it determine the conditions under which governments can access debt markets. But just how healthy is that influence? Is it needed? And will it give citizens the kind of government that they want, especially given the lack of what we've seen as taking responsibility for the difficult positions that many South Africans find themselves in? Accountability. Political economist Dr. Dale McKinley joins us now to talk about this. A very good evening to you, Dr. McKinley. Thank you so much for joining us here on Kaya Biz.
Sure. Good evening to Piso, to your listeners as well.
So there has been, over decades, we've seen some criticism leveled, especially at the top three credit ratings agencies, the manner in which they operate. But let's first start by looking at their role. And in an environment like this, what does their say-so have to do with how we eventually decide where we're going?
Well, I think it depends on who's listening in that case. You know, the credit agencies have quite a bit of sway within, obviously, the corporate sector, within the investment market, within those that are would be largely considered to be sort of the capitalist class, you know, that are paying attention to, you know, as you mentioned, debt markets, currency valuations, and so forth. So for them, when the credit agencies come out, as we saw in the last many years, and give the, you know, the investment grades and downgrade or upgrade or whatever, the markets respond in sort of, you know, different kinds of ways. Obviously, in terms of whether or not the country and the government's a good bet for investment or to take on bonds or whatever the case might be. But if you're talking to ordinary people, your ordinary South African voter, or those that many of who didn't vote but who are watching very closely, the impact and the level of influence is negligible. Most people, first of all, have no idea who these credit ratings are, agencies are. They don't know where they get their power from, that they consider them sort of, you know, unelected sort of voices of capital in most cases. And they're wondering why it is that they have so much influence. So I think in this case, you know, obviously politicians, in this case, the ANC in particular, because it still remains the majority party and it's going to form the whatever government we have, is going to pay quite close attention, because they do have to pay, you know, attention to the basics of the fundamentals of the economy, of where things are going, how the markets are going to react to that, both domestically as well as nationally. But they also have to consider what people, the fact is that they got seriously punished at the polls. And the reason why they got punished was simply because they weren't able to deliver the basics and to be able to satisfy their own constituents that, you know, that there's going to be growth, there's going to be jobs, there's going to be a decent standard. So if they completely ignore that sentiment and what they might have to, what some people would call more populist politics or redistributive politics or politics that the market doesn't like, and they simply go with, you know, a much more conservative sort of status quo kind of perspective, then they're going to have to pay they might pay even higher political price. If on the other hand, the conundrum is if they just, you know, essentially go in the other direction and basically, you know, implement policies that are not at all going to fundamentally change people's lives, then they're going to pay a much more longer term political price for that. So it's a difficult situation for them, But the credit agencies do play a role. They just have different levels of influence depending upon who's listening.
And I want to look at exactly who's listening. When Fitch, for instance, warns against what they see as a radical agenda, talking about nationalizing wide-scale expropriation of land without compensation, are they speaking directly to investors? And does that mean, as Fitch says, MKEFF could pose a danger that South Africa could lose development financing?
Look, you know, it's always possible, but I think sometimes these things are overplayed, and scare tactics are sort of in order, which is understandable. I mean, if you look at other countries in the cases of, you know, degrees of nationalization, or at least you say state control of enterprises, it's just not about state control. It's whether or not. I mean, if you look at China as an example, which has a huge amount of state control, but it has a very capable state. It has a state that is able to sort of mix and match in terms of private and public sector and state control. Here, I think the main concern is if you have a purely nationalization agenda, if you're going to do these things and you don't have a capable state and you don't have a state that is going to be able to sort of turn that into developmental progress, then what you're going to have is going to have more patronage, more corruption, more mismanagement, and so forth. And I think that's the fundamental issue here. So it's not so much the word nationalization sort of is like, you know, the Roy Chavar kind of language that used to be used for, you know, you're a communist. Oh, my God, we're all going to shake in our boots. I don't think that that's really, really the issue. The question is whether or not the ANC in this case can fashion a state that is capable of actually, you know, doing both delivering public goods on the one hand, but also delivering stability and other kinds of things that are needed for in a capitalist society, because we live in a capitalist society. And I think, you know, the EFFs and the MKs are sort of not in the real world in the context of thinking that they're going to simply, because if you're going to put in a nationalization policy, this is going to deliver, you know, to everybody. That's not going to be the case. So I think it's a balancing act that the ANC's got to play. And I think capital is going to, in this case, it's going to respond one way or the other, but eventually it will come to terms with whatever the case is, if they feel as though they're going to be able to still invest, they're still going to be able to make money. If they feel, however, that the ANC and a government is going in the opposite direction, let's say like a Zimbabwe has, then I think that's a different story. Then you're going to see people jumping ship. You're going to see disinvestment. You're going to see a serious sort of fiscal cliff being approached fairly quickly. I don't see that happening, at least in the short term, but it is always a possibility.
So on the one hand, you have reduced public support for what was once the governing party. And I want you to tell me what you think, if you're sitting there, on who would be the best coalition partner while avoiding what could be seen as short-termist policies.
Sure. And again, it's what you see is where it depends on where you sit in some ways in this case. So it's going to be, you know, politics is the art of compromise in many cases, and more so now that the ANC has lost its majority. It can't call the shots anymore. So it's going to have to bite the bullet. Now, the question is, who does it want to, you know, in which direction does it want? How does it read its own constituencies, and how does it read its own longer term survival? If you are one to say that, you know, for example, a coalition government or a sort of more informal arrangement with the DA, for example, is going to bring stability to the markets and is basically going to have some kind of, you know, possibilities for more economic growth and so forth. The question is whether or not that sizable constituency of the ANC and those that defected to the MK in particular and the EFF, which make up a good, 25% of the electorate in this case, is going to accept that, or is going to be able to gain strength and use that in order to take away even more support, so that in the next election, the ANC not only loses their majority, but becomes a serious minority party and loses out completely. So that wouldn't be a particularly smart move on their part if that's the way they read it. However, if they are looking, for example, at coalition partners with the EFF or MK, or let's say some of the smaller parties, the IFP and others, then they've got to look and say, okay, what's the price we're going to pay with the markets? What's the price we're going to pay with those, the corporates and those that are basically running the economy at this stage. Can we absorb that? Do we have the capacity to plug those gaps? Do we, you know, do we look east as opposed to west? All those kinds of things. I'm not sure. Once again, I'm not sure that that is going to be the best strategic choice, even though ideologically one could sort of hold one's nose and say that, you know, in many cases, the DA and the ANC are fairly similar in some cases, but in historical terms are quite on not opposite sides of the fence, but different ones. The short term would be the DA coalition for sure, I think. But the long term political survival of the ANC and those strategic considerations could force them to look at a coalition government that involves more parties and it spreads out the risk. So it's not simply seen as something that we're capitulating to a predominantly white, more conservative party, but are increasingly embracing a much more wider ideological spectrum that would play, I think, much better with its own constituents, would probably be accepted by the markets in the longer term, and could provide more political stability as well.
All right. And just a quick one, Dr. McKinley, just the voting pattern that we've seen in this election, does it point to a particular political ideology that South Africans believe will help them reach a better, prosperous economic future with the kind of reforms that would get them there, as in have better pay, more jobs?
I don't see that there's a really standout sort of ideological platform that has surfaced in these elections. In fact, the one thing that's not been really talked about a great deal is the 40% of people who are registered to vote who chose not to vote. That rivaled the ANC. In fact, the largest portion of the electorate decides not to vote. That's a concern for many people, because what it says is that irrespective of what ideological positions are being punted by whatever political parties, that an increasing number of people simply have opted out. They don't believe that the system is going to deliver for them. They don't believe that the choices of political parties have their interests at heart, so forth and so on, and particularly the younger generation. So my sense is that South Africans want practical solutions. My sense is South Africans are not so caught up in ideological battles about this ism or that ism. And what it is, they want something that's practical and efficient and that delivers the basics and some degree of a future where they can see that their children and their families are going to have a decent standard of living. I think it's that quite that simple, at least for the majority. For those that already have capital, for those that are interested, you know, have money to invest, who are their horizons are a bit wider. And I think they can pretty much have much more flexibility in terms. But for those who are here and have no other place to go, and don't have those kinds of options, I think it doesn't really make a huge bit of difference to most South Africans what the ideological standpoint is. It's whether or not the government of the day can do its job and do it decently. Right.
Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it, Dr. Dale McKinley, political economist.
Thank you.
Speaking to us about the various comments that have been made by credit ratings agencies and other commentators within the international financial institutions spheres. So, Mkhaya, you have your say. What are your thoughts around this, the possible influence that some of these agencies could have on the kind of government we get, and what Dr. McKinley was saying, the fact that such a huge chunk of the South African population did not vote is actually even more concerning. If you're one of those, maybe you want to call in and tell us why you didn't vote. Is it lethargy? Is it ambivalence? Or just simply lack of trust and belief in the parties that have been parading their political wares, manifestos, so to speak. So the phone line number is 086-000-00959. You can tweet us at Kaya on air using hashtag Kaya Biz. WhatsApp line is 0636-880959. And we are also on SMS 36959 on DSTV channel 861.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.